I am Planta on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. A new book, Earth to Table, Seasonal Recipes from an Organic Farm, is a lavishly photographed book reminding us of the importance of eating locally. Slow food as opposed to fast food is in vogue, as well as 100-mile diets and the sort. This book takes us through the four seasons and shows us that there is much local eating possible throughout the country. With anecdotes from top chefs around the world, the book's authors Jeff Crump and Bettina Shorman share their farming lessons learned. Growing your own food is not as hard as you might think. Mr. Crump is the executive chef at the Ancaster Old Mill, and Ms. Shorman, the pastry chef there, have written a useful and handsome book. Its photographs were taken by the commercial photographer Edward Pond. Jeff Crump, who joins me now from here in Vancouver, has trained at some of the world's top restaurants, including Chez Panisse in Berkeley, California, The Fat Duck in England as well, as Lumiere and the Fish House here in Vancouver. The book is published by Random House. The website for more is earthtotable.ca. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Jeff Crump. Good morning, Chef Crump.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well. Yourself?
Good. Thanks for having me.
How long ago was it that you were at Lumiere and at the Fish House?
1997. I actually worked two jobs simultaneously, Lumiere and the Fish House at Stanley Park.
I read somewhere that the experience at Lumiere was not a good one.
Well, it didn't last as long as I had hoped. I was a very young cook. It was actually my first kitchen job. it was the very early days of Lumiere and, Rob trying to get the place, to the level that it was supposed to be. It was very hard, but I was the weak link. I was the low man on the totem pole, that's for sure.
Did you grow up here?
No. No, I'm from London, Ontario.
So, this book, how did this book come about? I mean, as I said in the intro, it's a wonderfully illustrated book.
It came about quite humbly, actually. Ever since my days at Chez Panisse, I've always sourced out my product from local farms for the sheer quality. Bettina and I were actually trying to put together a spiral-bound book for our restaurant, for our customers to see, to give profiles of all the farmers that we use for our chicken, our lamb, and our beef and whatnot. And it really just snowballed from there.
This is not a spiral-bound book. It's in hardcover, and it's as I said, quite good to look at. Did that surprise you that they came through with the design of it all?
Yes. Obviously, we weren't looking for this when we first started, but it's taken us, since the day we started, it's been 3 years since we got a publisher, Random House of Canada. It took about a year and a half to produce this, and it's been just a really great experience working with really talented professionals, the photographer and Claire Stubbs, the food stylist. She was actually the first person that we contacted to help us put together our little book. But then we realized, Edward and Claire are professionals that make professional cookbooks, and that's where sort of our road to Random House started.
So the Ancaster Old Mill, that's in Ancaster, Ontario, and that's for people that aren't familiar. That's south of Toronto, is it? Southwest.
Yeah, southwest of Toronto. It's just outside of Hamilton. It's in between Toronto and Niagara, the Niagara Peninsula, so it's a really nice spot.
So the deal there is that you're the chef, Bettina is the pastry chef, and you have a farm there attached to the restaurant?
No, Manor Run Farm is where, the restaurant is quite rural, and Manor Run Farm is about a 5-10 minute drive from the restaurant, and it's owned by Chris Kruger, who is the farmer, and he's the one that, we have relationships with a lot of farms and a lot of local producers, but this one was very special, and Chris allowed us on the farm, and, we spent, it's been now 5 years working with him. My cooks are allowed to work on the farm as part of their shifts. It was a real symbiotic relationship, I think.
And do they grow what you want, or do you sort of cater your menu towards what they're growing there?
It's very collaborative. Chris has interest in what he does. He obviously has the ultimate say, but we're his number one client, so the the customer is always right. But we definitely work together, and we've had successes and failures. I remember one season Chris planted a lot of radishes, and thinking that we would love radishes, or maybe I mentioned I really love radishes at one point. But, you know, he was delivering bushels of radishes where, you know, in a restaurant we were using, you know, two bunches a week, you know, shaving them on salads and things. And, you know, so we've had some real, a lot of trials and tribulations in doing this.
So Chris is a member of the CSA. That's a Community Shared Agriculture Program.
Well, Chris owns the CSA.
He owns the CSA.
And we are the member.
Oh, you're the member. Okay, so how does that work then? He has multiple members, I guess, in the community?
Yeah, it's actually, you know, like we said in the conclusion of the book, it's really the best way if you want to, you know, support local agriculture. This is the best way to do it. And what happens is we actually, so if your listeners join a CSA, so a farm would have so many shares, or, you know, they would know how much food they were going to grow in the coming season, and some farms have 100 shares, some farms have 50, some have much more. So your family would pay the farm in January, say, $400, and that would entitle you to weekly deliveries of fresh fruits and vegetables as the seasons go throughout the year. The beauty of that is the farmer, you're actually sharing in the risk. Usually a farmer, you know, sows, harvests. It takes months of investment for the farmer, and then you as a consumer simply pick up the bunch of carrots. And if the crop is lost for multiple reasons, us as consumers never really see that, but the farmer takes the 100% loss. Whereas if you're involved in a CSA, you're willing to invest in the farm, and, you know, if there's a loss for carrots, then we all share in that loss. I don't think our farmers should be holding the bag at the end of the day. But what normally happens is you get really great carrots in season, tomatoes in season, and that's the idea of community shared agriculture.
Now, Bettina, she's the pastry chef at the Ancaster Old Mill. Is she able to find the ingredients she needs locally for all of the recipes that you have at the restaurant and in this book?
No. One of the things that we speak about quite seriously within the book is that our relationship with the local movement is not an all-or-nothing proposition. So we are adamant in sourcing the best quality produce. So in our area, peaches, tree fruit is very popular in Ontario, as it would be in the Okanagan Valley. We grow wheat in Ontario, but we don't harvest sugar. We don't grow vanilla. We don't grow citrus. So these are a lot of things that Bettina uses within the pastry department, and we purchase those. And, you know, this thing for us is not about sacrifice. It's about quality. It's about, you know, doing what's best with food. And so definitely we use imported food as well.
We've seen a lot of farmers markets here in Vancouver as of this summer, especially in the West End and in the city center as well. Is that something that's in fashion throughout the country, you find?
Farmers markets. Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely. From coast to coast, all through the states. It's definitely a trend. I hope it's, you know, a new norm. But farmers markets are really growing. Actually, in our area, the markets are starting to outnumber the farmers. Some of the farmers that I speak with, are having a hard time. They're getting requests for to be have stalls at farmers markets where they just can't do that physically. So, absolutely, it's a great trend.
And locally grown food, you mentioned it being a trend. Is that a trend throughout the continent, do you find?
Yes, it's a global trend. We have interest. Well, Slow Food is a global organization, but our book is actually being translated into Mandarin. It will be for sale in Hong Kong in October. So Japan, China, Australia, it's a trend throughout the world.
Now, we've been used to imported food for far too long, especially on this coast because we're so close to the water and it's cheap to import goods. But at the end of the day, the carbon footprint of the sort, which you talk about in the book, that's a large cost. Do you find that we're going to move away from that and go towards more locally grown food?
Yes. You know, I think there's going to be a real big learning curve for us on this one because we're very used to paying for cheap food. And the cheap food comes from other places, other countries that have really been able to commoditize and, you know, monoculture and big factory farms. So I think the real, if this is going to happen, if there's going to be this switch or this shift, people here in Canada are really going to have to start valuing food, and what I mean is pay for food. Because if someone has 5,000 acres of carrots in the Salinas Valley of California, their cost, even with shipping, is cheaper than, for example, Chris at Manor Run Farm with, you know, a quarter acre of carrots. Just by sheer economies of scale. So that shift in thinking where good conventional food is cheap and organic food is expensive, we have to switch that around. We have to really be clear that this conventional food is far too cheap.
Now, the assumption that local food, the assumption was that local food sucked, that it was tasteless, that it was bland, that there was not too much variety, but even in Vancouver here, can we grow throughout the year?
Yes. You know, there's a lot of seasonal, and one of the things that we highlight in the book is seasonality doesn't necessarily mean fruits and vegetables. There's livestock, meat, and what's a real sort of thing that I, you know, even when I cooked here in Vancouver, is artisan food producers, people who make salamis and charcuterie and cheese and vinegars. You know, all those things is a locally sourced produce, but are preserved for the winter seasons. So there's just an abundance of food available that is available locally, that is of very high quality, that is seasonal even in the wintertime. So, and I also think the idea of waiting, not having tomatoes in the wintertime and not having strawberries throughout the winter and waiting for them when they're actually in season is a form of hedonism that, you know, we don't have anymore. You know, I think there's an idea of, well, you notice like when people get excited about corn on the cob, that's one vegetable that people seem to hold out for. And so there's a bit of a frenzy when corn is out. And we could have that pleasure with all foods if we just step back and started eating with the seasons again.
And are some of the fancy restaurants that you profile in the book, like the French Laundry in California or the Fat Duck in London, are they getting it too? Are they starting to serve locally produced food?
Oh, they always have. The Fat Duck was quite a unique one because, you know, Heston is not known for local produce. He's known for molecular gastronomy, but what I realized in his restaurant is all the food that he turns into foams and vapors and this kind of thing is all sourced locally. And he, you know, it's a Michelin 3-star restaurant. It's committed to the best food possible, and that, just like the French Laundry and Blue Hill at Stone Barns, they are committed to quality over the local scene. And that really reinforced the fact that it's win-win for us. Not only are we lowering our environmental footprint, not only are we leaving our money within our community as opposed to shipping it off to other countries, not only are we establishing a community and meeting people and talking to people again, this actually is the best food, and the best restaurants in the entire world serve this kind of food, and they're not trying to be activists.
Well, one of the things I was reading about you was that you're an advocate for slow food. You're one of the pioneers of that movement. I also read that you serve prime rib in your restaurant. How do you do that?
How do I serve prime rib?
Yeah, how is it prepared?
Well, we actually cook it sous vide.
That's in bags, right, or something like that?
Yes. What it is it's actually precision temperature cooking, and I learned this at the Fat Duck. The idea is cooking meats at the exact temperature that they should be done. You know, when we cook a chicken or a piece of prime rib, in conventional ways, we pan sear it on the stove and then put it in a 400-degree oven, and it really only has to get to 140 degrees for medium beef. So the skill of the cook, you have to actually take the chicken out or the meat out of the oven before it overcooks. Well, if you cook sous vide, which means under vacuum, in a water bath that is exactly the temperature you want it to be, a couple things happen. First of all, the meat is incredibly tender. When we do our lamb racks like that, you know, you don't get that bullseye effect where it's, you know, cooked on the outside and then raw through into the center. It's the exact, it's medium rare from the tip of the prime rib to the center. It's a real precise way to cook. The meat is more tender. The meat never goes over the boiling point, which it would in an oven. So there is zero moisture loss, so the meat is much more juicy and flavorful. It's just an incredible way to cook certain cuts of meat, and prime rib is a prime example.
And could I tell the difference, say, from the conventional way, if I had it at your restaurant?
If you saw it, when you, like, my customers don't know I do that. Or, let's put it this way, we don't advertise that. Because our customers, you know, are looking for a very traditional cut, and I don't know if they would understand what we're doing, so no, you would not be able to know. You would just be blown away on how tender this meat is, how juicy it is, and when it comes out of the bath, it hasn't been touched to high heat, so we actually pan fry the big chunks of prime rib in cast iron pans before we serve it. Therefore, you would get a nice pink, juicy green piece of meat with a nice char on the outside, which is exactly what everyone wants in meat.
Say, when you're in Vancouver like you are today, where do you go to eat?
Well, my favorite restaurant is Blue Water Cafe for a couple reasons. I used to work for that company, Top Table. I worked at Araxi in Whistler. But Frank Papps, he was actually a sous chef when I was at Lumiere. And he's a really great guy, a really amazing chef, and he's really come into his own over these last few years. So Blue Water Cafe is, you know, is my pick these days.
You're a chef, that's your job. Do you miss cooking at all when you're in book tour like this?
I miss the kitchen. I miss my team. I love to eat as much as I love to cook, so I'm excited to be able to you know, be a customer every once in a while. But so no, I don't miss cooking, but I definitely miss home. I miss my kitchen staff, that's for sure, and my family.
Jeff, congratulations on this book to you and Bettina. Continued good luck with it.
Thank you so much. We're just we really enjoying this ride, and I really hope people read this book because we got a lot of information in there. It's not just a cookbook. There's 20,000 words, and we're very proud of it, and I hope Canada is proud of it as well.
Indeed. The book is well illustrated. People should pick it up. The recipes are easy to follow as well. Earthtotable.ca is their website for more. Co-written with Bettina Shorman. The book is called Earth to Table, Seasonal Recipes from an Organic Farm, published by Random House. Chef Jeff Crump on the line. I'm Joseph Planta.